You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC.
Hey, while you were down in Mexico last week, you know, I went to the Voyage AC factory and I got this candle that I can't stop smelling. I put it on my nightstand and I'm not exaggerating. It gives me the most beautiful dreams.
Because it smells so good?
Yeah, check this out. It has notes of tobacco and vanilla.
Is that what that is?
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. You know, that would make a good cologne.
Ooh, that's a good idea, hon. We should tell Melanie. Voyage AC is your destination for all these amazing candles. You'll want to go online right now. Check out their amazing Father's Day gifts, too, like shaving cream, facial toner, or maybe Dad would like one of these incredible candles. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right
what?
Now. Yep, that's 10% off everything you buy.
Yep, and all you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
This episode is being sponsored by Cute Booty Lounge.
Hey, did you see the response to my workout post last week when I was wearing my new elevated black ice outfit? Which is, by the way, the most comfortable workout gear I've ever owned.
Mm-hmm. You mean the one where you look like a superhero?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might have caught that. And I really appreciated the way it fit.
Yes, honey. And all these women were like, that outfit, where did you get it?
Yeah, it's nice to be sponsored by a company that we love so much, isn't it?
Yes, sir, it is. And that's why I love telling folks about Cute Booty Lounge. Listen to that, Cute Booty Lounge. It's made right here in the USA by women and for women. This company, you guys, it's incredible. It's female and minority owned. And they make your booty look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Dresses, tops, loungewear, sleepwear, leggings. And their leggings have these super cute patented scrunch butt pockets. There is a cute booty style for everyone. Cute Booty Lounge has you covered. Embrace your body. Love your booty.
Right. And to make it even sweeter, head to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order.
It's such a great deal.
Yes, get yours now. Head over to cutebootylounge.com and enter the code THEONLYBOOTY to get 15% off your first order. Several times a week, Laura will turn to me after we get into bed and say those six little words I've been waiting to hear all day. Can I read something to you? Once I've said yes, she reaches for an item from her very cluttered nightstand and proceeds to bring that book, blog post, poem, essay, or article to life with her voice. I hope you enjoy listening to her read as much as I do. Here's this week's selection from Laura's nightstand.
Hi, yes, this is On My Nightstand, as Scott said, and I'm Laura Cathcart-Robbins. And today I'm going to be reading from the memoir Black Boy Out of Time by Hari Ziad. Hari was one of our previous guests. Hari will be a guest in the future as well to talk about Abolishing the Police. Hari Ziad is a cultural critic, a screenwriter, and the editor-in-chief of Race Baiter. They are a 2021 Lambda Literary Fellow, and their writing has been featured in BuzzFeed, Out, The Guardian, Pace Magazine, and the academic journal Critical Ethnic Studies, among other publications. Previously, they were the managing editor of the Black Youth Project and a script consultant on the television series David Makes Man, which Scott and I love, which also stars Travis Coles, who is another guest on the show. Hari spends their all-too-free time trying to get their friends to give the latest generation of R&B starlets a chance and attempting to entertain their always very unbothered Pitbull mix, Keone. For more information about the author, visit www.hariziad.com. This chapter is Chapter 7, Guilt in Gods, and this is Hari having a crush on Michael and how that plays out. Michael welcomed me with open arms into his friend group, which included two other dedicated choir boys, John and Kelvin. The three were inseparable. John and Kelvin wanted to be musicians just like Michael and weren't as forgiving about my lack of skill, but Michael always defended me to them. Hari's not even a singer and still has just as good an ear as you, John, he chastised when John would playfully latch onto a mistake of mine, forcing John into silence. Michael was far more skilled with music than John, and he knew John wouldn't question his characterization of anyone's musicianship. Michael defended me so convincingly that sometimes he even made me believe that I had the ear of a real singer. Michael, John, Calvin, and I hung out together and talked on the phone nightly. But as our friendship progressed, sometimes I would call Michael, just Michael, after we got off our four-way call to talk about everything and nothing. He didn't seem to find this weird. Sometimes he would call me, just me, too. Can you come to the party? Michael asked during one of our private calls during the spring of our last year in high school together, after we'd rid ourselves of John and Kelvin. You know my mother, I said, repeating an excuse I'd given him countless times. Yeah, but I thought it was worth a try. He sounded defeated, hurt even. And somehow that hurt me too, though I didn't have the words for why. I mean, I could try to sneak out, I said. Hari sneaking out? He laughed that oddly understanding laugh of his, full of shock, but lacking any real judgment. At first, I didn't know what made me want to break the rules for Michael. I'd had other very close friends before, and I'd done anything to protect them from being hurt. But they'd never expressed pain for my absence the way Michael seemed to. I knew his feelings were different because his absence was excruciating for me, too. And I saw my pain reflected in his eyes. I saw myself when I looked into them. We're almost like brothers, I said to him one day in an attempt to explain my feelings. Yeah, like brothers, he smiled. But that light wasn't there when he said it. And nothing could ever be adequate without that. When I showed up to the first party I sneaked out to attend, the joy I saw emanating from Michael's face no less than demanded I show up again to the next. It wasn't a regular occurrence then, but whenever I stole my parents' van, it was almost always to be with Michael, to see that smile beaming back at me through a night I'd otherwise have spent shrouded in an indescribable loneliness away from him. I felt guilty, of course. But the alcohol came to help with that. When Michael gave me my first drink, he didn't push it on me. I had noticed it seemed to help with his feeling carefree, and like I said, I wanted that. So I asked for his red Solo cup, still fresh with the wet from his lips. Are you sure? He smiled. I imagined tasting a hint of his breath on the rim, and I'd never been more sure of anything. The drinking helped with the guilt. Only while I was drunk. It exasperated it afterward, which only encouraged me to be drunk as often as possible. Drinking also gave me an excuse to be with Michael. High school kids seemed to understand why we spent so much time together when getting drunk was the reason, when they might not have been so understanding of any other reason I could not yet name. Sometimes when I sneaked out, the best times, there was no party to attend. It was just me and Michael, drinking in his basement, talking shit about the choir and school and Cleveland Heights, anything or nothing. His parents never discovered I was in their house or that we'd stolen their alcohol, even when we crept up to Michael's room right across from theirs. "Why don't you just sleep over?" Michael asked me on one of these nights. My chest, in a prelude to its later persistent torment in my life, responded like a popular teen's phone buzzing with 100 notifications at once when it started up after a week of being powered off. "You know my mother," I said, trying to calm the fluttering. "I do." I could almost see his chest rise and fall like waves on a high tide, matching mine. I was drunk. I shouldn't have been driving anyway. I wanted to see him beam at me. I needed to. "I can just leave early in the morning," I said, relenting. And then there it was, that smile. Michael had only one sibling still living in the house, an older sister, and she had her own room. But for some reason, he had a second bed in his. And when I asked him why, he just shrugged and laughed. I was happy to fill in the blank with the fantasy that he had insisted it be there as he lay in wait for the perfect person to share a room with, for me. He brought up drinks from the basement and poured me another before plopping down on his bed. I kicked off my shoes and sat on what you could no longer tell wasn't my bed, too. As Michael turned on some singing competition show, he sang along with the auditions and sounded better than any of the contestants. I never looked at the screen. I took constant sips of my drink, watching him and waiting for the night to brighten when he returned my glance. "Do you want to lie on the floor?" he finally asked, taking a large gulp from his glass. It shouldn't have made any sense that we would move to the floor when we had two comfortable beds between us, but it was the only thing that felt logical at the time. "Sure." Michael laughed with noticeable discomfort I'd never seen on him as he rolled a blanket on the floor, threw pillows from his bed on top of it, and lay down on the pallet. I grabbed my pillow and lay down beside him. "Come closer," he said, and I did. When I visibly tried not to touch him, he laughed again, as if I had sung the wrong note in the passenger seat of his mother's car. Then wrapped me in his arms, and I realized what he meant for me to do. I realized I was always supposed to have done this, and I held him back, as much as you can hold the sun. When I woke up at 4 a.m., I had sobered up. We hadn't gone any further than holding each other that night, but still the guilt was suffocating. That's the most depressing thing about being queer in this world, is the fact that it isn't just the possibility of your sexuality that you were taught to be afraid of. A world where you can hold the person you love without guilt terrifies you too. I had never held another boy in my arms. I had never been held that way with my consent either. And I had been taught that I was never supposed to feel that much joy, so I could only beat myself up when I did. "I have to go," I said, gasping for air and pushing him away. "Are you sure?" he asked. "You know my mother." I held my breath for what couldn't have been biologically the entire 10-minute drive home, but it felt like it. When I pulled into the driveway, I found Mata waiting up for me. "Shit," I mumbled to myself. "Shit, shit, shit." On My Nightstand is a special segment of the Only One in the Room podcast. Today's episode was produced by Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, and executively produced by Christina Barcy, who we call Barcy. Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible, brand new Only One interview, and every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading from something that I love. If you have an Only One in the Room story or a piece of writing that you'd like to share, please submit it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.